Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kirato Hunandra Pulinda Pukasha Abhira Shumba Yavana Kasadaya Yen Yecha Papa Yadapa Shraya Shraya Shudyanti Tasmai Prabhu Vishnave Namaha Kirato Hunandra Pulinda Pukasha Abhira Shumba Yavanakashadaya Yenye Cha Papa Yadapashraya Shraya Shudyanti Tasmai Prabhu Vishnave Namaha.
Translation and Purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Kirato Huna Andara Pulinda
Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Shri Gaurita
Abhira Shumba Yavana, members of the Kasa race, and even others addicted to sinful acts, can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Due to his being the supreme power, I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto him.
Purport. Kirata, a province of old Bharatavarsha,
mentioned in the Bhishma Parva of the Mahabharata. Generally, the Kiratas are known as the aboriginal tribes of India, and in modern days, the Santal Parganas in Bihar and Chota Nagpur might comprise the old province named Kirata. Huna, the area of East Germany and part of Russia, is known as the province of the Hunas. Accordingly, sometimes a kind of hill tribe is known as the Hunas. Andhra, a province in South India mentioned in the Bhishma Parva of the Mahabharata. It is still extant under the same name. Pulinda, it is mentioned in the Mahabharata Adi Parva. That is, the inhabitants of the province of the name Pulinda. This country was conquered by Bhimasen and Sahadev. The Greeks are known as Pulindas, and it is mentioned in the Vana Parva of the Mahabharata that the non-Vedic race of this part of the world would rule over the world. This Pulinda province was also one of the provinces of Bharata, and the inhabitants were classified among the Kshatriya kings. But later on, due to their giving up the Brahminical culture, they were mentioned as Mlechas, just as those who are not followers of the Islamic culture are called Kafirs, and those who are not followers of the Christian culture are called heathens. The purport goes on. If we get a chance, we'll read the rest of it. Shrigadev Goswami is glorifying the purifying potency of the personality of Godhead. If anyone comes in contact with him, he becomes transformed. The high-class Brahmins should not be too proud and claim exclusive right to worship the Lord. God doesn't have to accept their worship. He doesn't accept the worship of those who are proud. Shat karma nipuno vipro mantra tantra vishadadaha vishadadaha. A Vaishnava Guru Nasyad
Swapacho Vaishnavo Guru.
One may be a learned Brahmin. To be born in a Brahmin family is good fortune, but you're not a Brahmin just by being born a Brahmin. Manu, in the Manusmriti, says this. Janmana jayate shudra samskared
hi bhaved dvijaha.
One is, everybody's born a shudra. By birth, you're a shudra. Shudra is in the mode of ignorance. Anybody who's born, a child, an infant, is in the mode of ignorance. Everything he learned in his past life, he's forgotten. He has to go back to school and learn it all over again. He has to regain his intelligence. It takes 12 or 13 years of living in the mode of ignorance. So that's shudra. Samskaredi bhaved dvijaha. But by purification, by the Vedic purificatory processes, one actually becomes dvija, second born. So one who is born in a Brahmin family but is not, doesn't have the character and doesn't have the proper behavior of a Brahmin and the training that a Brahmin must have, he's Brahmabandhu, the family member of Brahmins, member of a Brahmin family, but he's not a Brahmin himself. He's a fallen Brahmin. Just like if someone does not take initiation before a certain cutoff date, I think the absolute limit is age of 14. If a son of a Brahmin does not take initiation by the age of 14, then he's not qualified to worship Vishnu. He's not qualified to perform sacrifice. He's called Vratya, fallen Brahmin. What does it speak if he never takes initiation? What does it speak if he has the thread but doesn't chant on it? It doesn't observe the regulations of Brahminical life? Then what kind of Brahmin is that? It's just a member of a Brahmin family. But he's not properly purified, he's not properly engaged. Unfortunately, most of the Brahmins in Kali Yuga are like that. They're not proper Brahmins. And then dvija is one thing, to be second born, to have the initiation and the basic purification. But a vipra is a learned Brahmin. When you take upanayanam and receive the mantra, then you can begin your Vedic education. That's just the initiation, the beginning. But it takes years of rigorous training to become learned, studying the Shastras and learning how to actually behave like a proper Brahmin. Then you become Vipra, when you're learned and well-trained and cultured. So, it's stated, who is saying that? I don't know the source of the verse. But even a learned Brahmin, who is expert in the six duties of a Brahmin. What are those six duties? They're also stipulated by Manu. Patanam, patanam, yajanam, yajanam, danam, parigraha. These are the six basic occupational activities of Brahmanas. Just like Krishna mentions in the Gita, krishi goraksha vanijyam. Vaishyas, their proper occupations are farming, protecting cows, and then doing business. Third. Preferable is taking care of cows and farming. So Brahmanas, Krishna doesn't describe the way to make a living for Brahmanas. That's secondary. Krishna focuses on the qualities of Brahmins. Shamo, dabam, tapak, shau, cham. The inner activities. Control of the senses, control of the mind. Or steer concentration of the attention. Shaucham, cleanliness. Gyanam Vigyanam Astikyam. Knowledge, practical realization, and faith in the authority of the Vedas and faith in the Supreme Lord. These are the qualities of a Brahmin. But the practical occupational activities of Brahmin are described by Manu. Patanam patanam. Studying scripture. Or studying various sciences also and arts. Patanam. Then sharing your knowledge, teaching others. Yajanam, worshipping, performing Vedic sacrifice, and doing worship of the Supreme Lord. And then performing such worship for others, acting as a priest, yajanam. Those are four. Danam pratigraha. So the last of the six occupational duties are to accept charity. And the one before that is to give charity. A brahmana should not, he has the privilege to live on charity. He doesn't have to take a job. He can simply, ideally a brahmana should simply perform his spiritual and his intellectual duties. He should worship the Lord, he should meditate, study the Shastra, teach, and some other occupations. A brahmana can be an astrologer, he can be a doctor, he can perform some brahminical services. But he shouldn't even ask for payment. He shouldn't charge for his services at all. That's ideal. Because the community, those who he helps, the members of the community, the children, the families whom he's giving these services to, should supply, out of charity, should supply all his needs, should reciprocate by just giving him whatever he needs. And if they give him more than he needs, he should give it away. It's said that a proper Brahmin should not keep food more than he can eat the same day. Whatever he can't use the same day, he should give away. Now, he shouldn't keep food in the refrigerator, he shouldn't keep a bank balance. Everything he can't use immediately, he has to get it off his hands and give it to somebody else. That's ideal Brahmin. Taking charity is proper for a Brahmin, but he cannot keep more than he immediately needs. Then he must also give it away to somebody else. Those are the six duties. Kali Yuga, basically one of those duties is remembered. Brahma Bhojana, I'm a Brahmin, give me money, feed me. Now, take charity. That's all that all the Brahmins can remember. there are exceptional cases. There are selfless teachers and great devotees, but they're rare in Kali Yuga. So the statement is that even a Brahmin is expert in these six duties, and he's faithfully following them. And he's mantra tantra visharadaha. He's very competent in the mantras and the tantras. Tantra includes the pancharatra, agama, or the Shaivites have their tantras. These are practical textbooks on how to perform worship, mantras and deity worship. These are explained in the agamas, pancharatra and others. So he may be expert in mantras and in worship, a Vaishnavo, but if he's not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, then he should not be accepted as a guru. And someone may be, by birth, a dog eater. Lowest class of man, chandala. But if he's a Vaishnav, he's a guru. This is the statement of Shastra, of Smriti. And this is further explained here by Shukadev. Shukadev, who himself is born from the best of Brahmin families, son of Vyasadev. Who can claim a better Gotra than that? He says that even the most fallen classes of men, and he mentions the whole list here, of the Kirathas, Unas, he mentions the Andras. I don't know if there's anybody here from Andhra Pradesh, but at least 5,000 years ago, they were considered fallen. And others, Chinese, the Germans are on the list here. Kasa is China, Kasha Desh. Even these people who are just totally outside the scope of Varnashram culture, barbarians, Even the barbarians,
Shudyanti, become sanctified, become saintly persons.
Yadapashraya. They don't even have to directly take shelter of the Supreme Lord. If they take shelter of those who have the shelter of the Supreme Lord, indirectly, if they take shelter of Vaishnavas, that's as good as taking shelter of Vishnu. And in fact, if someone takes shelter of Vishnu, but is not interested in the association of Vaishnavas, he's the lowest category of devotee. Archayam eva haraye pujam yakshadaye hate natad bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhaktak prakritak smritaha. If someone has great faith and enthusiasm to worship the deity of the Lord, he comes to the temple, you know, sings and dances and makes a big show in front of everybody of bowing down and making some offering. But he ignores the devotees in the temple. He has no devotion, no faith. He just doesn't have any faith, any trust in the bhaktas or in anybody else. So one of the nine Yogendras, one of the sons of Rishabhadev is speaking here. Sabhaktak prakrita smitaha. He's a materialistic devotee. We can call him a Vaishnav, but he's not a proper Vaishnav. He's still materialistic. This is third-class devotee. And the distinguishing feature of him is that he trusts Krishna, but he doesn't trust Krishna's devotees. Yeah. And that doesn't fully satisfy Krishna. You say you love me. Why don't you have any love for my devotees? It doesn't impress Krishna. But here, if the most fallen of people, people of barbarian background, take shelter of Krishna's pure devotees, then they are elevated above the non-Vaishnav Brahmins. And they're accepted in the assembly of Vaishnavas. At least pure Vaishnavas should accept them. Maybe the smartas who are, you know, too attached to the rituals, or even some Vaishnavas, will not accept them. You know, if a fallen person comes and sits in the same row as you to eat, that's pankti dushanam. You know, all the sadhus will get up and walk away, you know, if an impure person comes to eat. But here, in our Vaishnava assembly, we sit down together, and we invite everybody to come take Krishna's prasadam. We don't, you know, if someone, you know, who's questionable sits down on the line, it's not that everybody gets up and walks away in disgust. We're not like that, I hope. Yeah. It's very strict rules. They're stipulated in the Manusmriti. A brahmana who sells oil. You know, he may be a dukandar and he sells oil in his shop. He's considered pankti dushanam. He contaminates the line. If he sits down on the line, all the other brahmins will walk away. But that's not the Vaishnav attitude. A Vaishnav is considered holy, no matter what his background is. Apiched sudurācāro bhajate māmananyuvā sādhu-deva samyak-vyavasito hisaha. Even if his behavior is somewhat questionable. Apiched sudurācāro, even someone, what to speak of someone who used to be bad but now has rectified himself. Even if he's incompletely rectified, even if he's doing bad things, sudarācāro, how else can that be interpreted? Ācāra means what you're actually doing, not just what you used to do or what your grandparents used to do. Your ācāra is what you're doing now. So sudarācāro means someone who's doing the, you know, unacceptable things. Even he, bhajate mama nanyabak, if he's exclusively devoted to me, he should be considered a sadhu. Now, how to apply that That we have to think. Rupa Goswami gives his opinion. How do you deal with devotees who are who have attachment to Krishna? Have a crash attachment to Krishna's devotees. There are many devotees who have attachment to Prabhupada, but they can't behave properly, and they're even offensive against other devotees. What do you do with such devotees? How do you deal with them? How do you relate to them? So Rupa Goswami gives us practical guideline. In the Upadeshamrita, his short book, many sadhus like to write, you know, give their Upadeshamrita, 10, 15 shlokas with their summary of their instructions for their disciples. All the yogis and sadhus do this. But Rupa Goswami has done his 11-verse Upadeshamrita. So the format is very common. But the instructions of Rupa Goswami are very special, not like some ordinary guru. They're all saying something off the top of their head, some platitudes, you know, some nice-sounding words, flowery words. But Rupa Goswami is not just a speaker of platitudes, of empty, flowery words. His instructions go to the point. Describe to us how we can actually become Krishna's pure devotees. So he tells us, we have to make some practical distinctions. We should have respect for all Vaishnavas. But how we show that respect has to be appropriate for each individual. Krishna iti yasya giritam manasadriyeta. Dikshasti chet pranati bicha bhajantam isham sushushaya bhajana vigyam ananyamanya nindadi shunyam ipsita labda samgya labdya. If someone has ever uttered the name of Krishna, if the name of Krishna is on his tongue, or has ever been on his tongue, that person should be considered a Vaishnava. Anyone who is chanting Krishna's name, or used to chant Krishna's name, even if he has stopped, he's a Vaishnava. And he may be fallen. His behavior may not be proper, his attitude may be offensive. He may be a dangerous person to associate with. You may not want to get close to such a person. Because you may hear offensive things, he may abuse you, or he may speak abusively of other Vaishnavas. But you should offer respects to him in your mind. Keep a distance, but maintain a respectful attitude. Manasa Adriyeta, you should respect him in your heart, even if you can't go close to him. But then, dikshasti chet, if you find a devotee who is properly initiated, of course some get initiated and then fall down. So that means, well, dikshasti chet, chapa jantam isham, and he's actually engaged properly in the worship of the Lord in devotional practice. So he's taken shelter of a spiritual master, and he's following the instructions. He's actually engaged in Krishna's service, not deviant. So you find a devotee who is not deviated, you should bow down to him. You should make an open show of respect. You can bow down to him, you can embrace him, you can touch his feet, you can offer him service. And we call such a devotee Prabhu. Of course, we abuse the term. You know, Prabhu means anything from hey stupid or come over here, I want you to do something for me. Yeah. But Prabhu is a term of respect. Yeah. Or people in India know that you're supposed to call the ISKCON devotees Prabhu. You know, it's just business, you know. So we become like Jati Prabhus, you know, a caste of Prabhus. We don't want to do that. We don't want to just become another caste. You know, the Prabhu caste, the Iskonwalas. Prabhu is a term of respect, master. I'm your servant. When you bow down to someone, you're submitting. You're saying you're superior and I'm your servant. When you call someone Prabhu, that's what it's supposed to mean. And that's the attitude you should have toward any devotee who has taken shelter of a bona fide Vaishnava spiritual master and is following his instructions.
who is properly engaged in Krishna's service. When you meet someone who claims to be a Vaishnav, you can ask them, under whose guidance are you trying to serve Krishna? And if he can't answer it, if he says, well, I'm just doing it on my own, I'm approaching Krishna directly, then don't take him seriously. He's not a serious Vaishnav. A serious Vaishnav practices under the guidance of a spiritual master. Not try to approach Krishna on your own. So that's the qualification for a second-class devotee. And then, what if you meet somebody, Shushushaya, Bhajanavigyam, who's very elevated in the worship of Krishna. He actually knows how to please Krishna. And he has no envy against anyone, no bad feelings against anyone in the whole world. And he is exclusively devoted to devotion to Krishna's service. This is a Paramahamsa. You should be ready to dedicate your whole life to his service if you're so fortunate to meet such a person. Of course, you may already have your spiritual master. You can't just give him up and jump to another one. But you should have that attitude that if I could, I would give my whole life to this person. This is a Paramahamsa. At least I should take whatever opportunity I can have to serve him, to hear from him, and get his blessings. So these are the three different levels on which we offer respect to Vaishnavas. It's not the same. It depends on who the Vaishnava is and what level of which one of these three levels he's on. But we should have always respect for all the Vaishnavas. Then even if we're fallen, we become purified. Take shelter of those who have the shelter of Krishna. You'll also get the shelter of Krishna. Tasmai Prabhavishnave Namaha. The Supreme Lord, who is the most influential and powerful of all persons. Krishna, the name Krishna means he's supremely attractive. The supreme attractive person. He can attract even the barbarians, even the lowest people, and lift them out of their fallen condition. This is the power, the supreme power of Krishna. That he can kill demons is okay. Interesting. That he can create universes is also impressive. But the most impressive, the most wonderful feature, power of Krishna, is that he can deliver even the most fallen conditioned souls. And that's what Shukadev Goswami is meditating on here. And he's offering his prayers so that his speaking of the Bhagavatam, his answering the questions of Parikshit, will be appropriate and auspicious. Okay, so I'll stop with that. Are there any questions or comments? Hare Krishna. Only as much as they can do use on the same day. Yeah.
There was a earlier practice in the Harish Varsha that they in the evening or when they cook food, they go out and call out. Is there anybody who's hungry, who wants some food, and there's nobody, and then they go and honor the prasad?
That's a grihastha's responsibility. He cannot take his meal until he invites anybody who might be hungry. He has to go out in the street and call three times. And if someone responds, he has to feed everybody else first, and only if there's anything left over can he eat. If everything's gone, he has to fast. That's the standard. That's the standard, you know, enunciated by Manu in the Manu Smriti. Yes. Well, the story of was it not Shibi? Shibi's the one who was fasting. No. Shibi was the one they ate his flesh.
Ambarish.
Not Ambarish. No. Anyway, Maharaj, maybe it was Shibi.
The last year,
Okay, he fasted, he observed Dvadashi Vrat for 1 year. I think, I don't know how exactly what the Vrat is, but it was, you know, strict fasting on Ekadasi, you know, not even water, every Ekadasi for the whole year. And the year was up. It was the last Ekadasi he was observing. And it was time for breaking the fast. If he didn't properly break the fast, at the, you know, by the maximum time limit, the whole year's vow would be ruined. And so he had a meal prepared, and he was ready to properly break the fast, and beggar, you know, someone came begging food, and he gave half of his food. Then another person came. He was... who? Durvasa. Durvasa came first, yeah. So he fed Durvasa, then someone else came, then a Chandala came with his dogs. Yes. And these were actually great demigods who were coming to test him. And he was left with not even water to drink. He was about to leave his body. No, I'm sorry, this was a different fast. This was a 48-day fast. Yeah, he was fasting for 48 days. And then the demigods revealed themselves and gave him all benedictions. This is charity. It's a duty of the grihasthas to show charity, especially atitya seva, service to guests, especially unappointed guests. If you make an appointment with someone, he's your guest, but he's not atiti. Atiti means no appointment. You know, no date was set. Someone just shows up without an appointment. That's atiti, actually. And you have to treat him like the Supreme Lord. That's the duty of a grihastha.
Then Prabhupada, that is purport in the couple of these instructions to devotees, one of the purports of yesterday, he says there are three types of devotees. And the third kind of devotee is also liberated, Prabhupada says.
The lowest. Yes. But if he falls down, if because of his vulnerable position as a neophyte, he can be deviated from devotional service. He can even commit aparads. So if he falls down, then his liberation will be postponed. He'll have to resume his service. And if he commits aparads, it can be postponed for a number of lifetimes because of the aparads, a Vaishnava aparad. So it's conditional. It may be delayed. The award of the liberation may be delayed by fall down. If he doesn't fall down and comes to the higher level, then he's safe.
It's liberation is in store for him.
It's promised to him. It's like a trust account. You know, the father passes away and he wrote in his deed, "My son can have all my estate when he reaches the age of 21. Or he leaves ISKCON, whichever one comes first." Yeah, like that. But that's a, you know, that's in trust. It's not given until the stipulations are fulfilled. Jivete yo mukti bade sadaya bhak. One who simply goes on faithfully serving Krishna, even though he's got still suffering reactions of his past karma. If he goes on with determination, doing his devotional service, one who continues living like that, living the devotional life, mukti pade sadaya bhak, he's the appointed inheritor of his father's estate. That's daya. Daya is the father's inheritance. Daya bhak. That means he doesn't get it immediately, necessarily, but it's guaranteed to him in due course of time. The liberation. Mukti pade sadaya bhak. Okay? Thank you. Yes, sir.
What happens to the fate of a devotee who is rendering devotional service but is committing Vaishnava prana?
Krishna can excuse up to a point, but Krishna doesn't have the liberty to excuse very much aparad against his devotees. It depends on the seriousness of the aparad. You know, when siblings are quarreling, the mother doesn't take it as offense. So just, you know, minor conflicts among devotees, that's not necessarily serious aparad. But it's minor aparat. You know? And if you do it thousands and thousands of times, you know, dozens of times every day, it adds up. So even minor aparats, if they accumulate too much, then you fall down. You leave devotional service, you're dragged away by the material energy, and you may not come back in the same lifetime. But Krishna, on the other side of the balance sheet, the spiritual master and Krishna very much appreciate the service that the devotee has done, even though he committed aparads. So he'll be rectified as quickly as possible. He may be given very heavy suffering to get the reactions removed as soon as possible. Just like Jai and Vijay were cursed because of their offense to the four Kumaras. But Narayan gave him the blessing that you'll come back, Ma Baishto. Ashu, I don't remember the other words, but don't fear, you'll come back to me very quickly. Three lifetimes. From the Vaikuntha point of view, three lifetimes on the earth is not very much. The first one wasn't on the earth, actually. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were living in the heavenly planets. But anyway, only three lifetimes. Then you come back to me. So the arrangement was made that the offensive devotees quickly suffered the reactions of their offenses and came back to the Lord. But in some cases, a devotee may have to suffer for, say, 700 lifetimes if he commits very heavy... Yes? But there's also only three lifetimes for them. They took birth as sons of Kalanemi, sons of Hiranyakashipu, then Kalanemi, then Devaki's sons. So only in three lifetimes they were delivered also. It was not a very serious offense, actually. They were actually trying to correct their father, Brahma. But anyway, they got cursed. It was part of the pastime also. It's individual. It depends on the individual. The amount of, the degree of the curse, how long it lasts, how long the fall down lasts, depends on all the different factors Krishna takes into account. But if a devotee has sacrificed so much to try to serve the mission of his spiritual master, Krishna appreciates that, even if offenses have been committed. So some suffering has to be there, but then the devotee is reinstated. So we should take that into account when we see devotees who are committing offenses, who have fallen down. Don't just consider them outcasts. They'll be back. And then, you know, if we've rejected them, that's our fault. Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.